Hey, Unnaturalists, I'm Andy.
And I'm Ryan.
And welcome back to Unnatural. How goes it? You're looking away from the microphone there. Everything okay?
I mean, yeah. It's all good. It's all good in the hood, yo.
I feel like part of you gets a little worried once we start recording because you're like, okay, what's he going to keep in the episode? Is he going to take all of this out?
I never know. It's like waiting for you to betray me at any given moment.
I told him that in confidence. Yeah, but your microphone was on. So. Okay, I'll try not to betray you too much this episode, but this is, I guess, a relatively recent one, and I was kind of inspired because there's a documentary out about it right now, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but today we are heading down to Hungryland, which sounds like it's a game or something, like Candyland, or
kind of sounds like a place that stoners go.
Hungry. I was thinking of
to eat.
Maybe. Hey, man, let's go to Hungryland. I was thinking of hungry, hungry hippos for some reason. I don't know why. But anyway, I can honestly say it's a place I've never heard of before. But once I started researching this case, I was interested in it. And it's an absolutely huge wildlife preserve located in southern Florida, not far from West Palm Beach. Sadly, there have been a number of bodies found in the Hungryland over the years. I did a deep dive, and it's just one of those places where people dump bodies because they think they'll never be seen again. And one of these belonged to a mother, 30-year-old Trisha Todd of nearby Hobe Sound. But how she ended up there is a tragic and frustratingly heartbreaking tale. This is the story of the Hungryland murder. So if you're anything like me, you probably wondered, why is it called Hungryland? Well, Ryan, have no fear. I looked that up. And as it turns out, it got its name. It's actually in rather sad fashion.
Is it the alligators?
No. Although I'm sure there are alligators down there. Okay,
hungry ones.
This is according to the Florida Department of Natural Resources. And they said, quote, the Seminole Indians used the region as a refuge during the Seminole Indian War of 1835, but living off the land quickly proved difficult. Hundreds of starving Indians were captured and then sent to Oklahoma. The area became known as the Hungryland. So not such a fun way it got its name, but no one obviously deserves to be murdered, but the way 30-year-old Trisha Todd died is the stuff of nightmares. And we'll tell you exactly how she was killed later, but she was born in February 1986 to David Todd and his then wife, Rebecca. Her father would later describe her as full of life and a very loving little girl. Trisha was daddy's little girl, as she had seven brothers growing up. Seven. Can you imagine? Not just seven siblings, but all of them are brothers.
Yeah, I had one sister, and sometimes having my own children, thinking about my family, my grandfather is the oldest of 12.
Wow.
So
yeah,
I have to give people a lot of credit who have big families like that, because just the little taste of that I get, I'm like, that's a lot. That's
Can't
a lot
even
of
imagine.
People in the house.
Trisha wasn't afraid to be herself, and she stood out in high school and graduated from South Fork in 2004. And she almost immediately enlisted in the U.S. Air Force, where she would serve tours in Iraq and Kuwait, along with being on bases in North and South Carolina. Trisha learned at an early age that one of her gifts in life was helping others. So becoming a nurse was kind of a natural fit. And while all nurses deserve a shout out, by the way, May is National Nurses Month, Trisha went above and beyond as she was a hospice nurse. And according to nurses, that's one of the most demanding jobs in all of nursing. She had been at Treasure Coast Hospice for a few years, helping care for patients, many of whom were at the end of their life. My mom is a hospice nurse, and the work that they do is so important, and I feel like it is not recognized enough in our society. They don't get enough credit. Trisha was also a mother to a beautiful 2-year-old girl named Faith. Her brother Jonathan would later say that she was one of the most caring and affectionate mothers that you've ever met. I even watched some videos of her online, and she is so adorable with her daughter, and you can tell that the love she has for her is genuine and unending. And Trisha had also been a great partner and wife of Stephen Williams. They were, in fact, childhood sweethearts as they first met each other in elementary school, kind of grew up together, fell in love, got married at a young age. She actually joined the Air Force with Stephen, and they got married while they were serving together. But as with so many marriages, things began to fall apart. And after 11 years, the two called it quits. And I've seen a lot of breakups throughout the years. I'm sure you have too, Ryan. And sometimes the divorces are messy and drawn out and take a toll on not only the people getting a divorce, but also their children and their extended family. It can get really ugly sometimes. But by all accounts, this was not the case with Trisha and Stephen. Her father, David, even remarked that he was really proud of Trisha and the way that she handled the breakup. It was such an amicable divorce that Trisha, even though entitled by state law, declined alimony payment because she said she didn't want Stephen to have to deal with that. So it sounds like the two got along even though they were divorced. And that's great for them because they have a kid together. And Trisha ended up leaving the Air Force with her daughter, Faith. But Stephen did have custody as well. And she moved back to southeastern Florida to be closer to her parents, to be closer to her extended family. And she also got her registered nursing license.
Good for her.
She was living in Hobe Sound with her brother, Josh, until she could save up enough money to get a place of her own for her and Faith. And things seemed to be going pretty well for her, all things considered. But then, in April of 2016, only a few months after the divorce and her move back to Florida, Trisha vanished without a trace. Trisha's family got worried when Treasure Coast Hospice notified them that she hadn't shown up for work, which was extremely out of character for her. And they called the police to report her as a missing person. her brothers, it sounds like they sprang into action almost immediately and began looking for her, knocking on doors, searching everywhere they could find. They did notice that her car was still in the driveway of her home with her purse inside. It's a little weird.
That never sounds good.
No. Now, investigators began looking at her bank accounts, her credit cards, her cell phone usage. Ryan, we've seen this in previous cases. Sometimes there's a ping from the cell phone in a certain area or a withdrawal from an ATM or a credit card charge, and that can be a major break in a case, but not so much in Trisha's case. Or at least that's what it appeared at first. Now, security camera footage from the night she went missing first spotted Trisha at a local grocery store. The items bought from the store were found in her home, so clearly she went back home after going to the store. Also, a neighbor said he remembered seeing her leave her home later that night in her car, which is weird because I mentioned her car was found at her residence after the missing persons report was filed. Just kind of strange. Also, as it turns out, Trisha's ex-husband, Stephen, was in Florida to visit their daughter that week. And Trisha had gone to see him that night. Stephen told investigators that the baby, Faith, wasn't feeling very well that night, and Trisha had come to where he was to check on her. He said she left shortly after, and he assumed that she went back home. He also told police that Trisha was supposed to pick up Faith the very next morning, but she never showed up. So he left Faith with a babysitter and went back to his Air Force base. I know what you're thinking. This guy's getting a little sus here, right?
I mean, he's a suspect, in my opinion.
And it may seem pretty cut and dry here, but it was also uncovered during the investigation that Trisha had a new man in her life. And apparently, she was head over heels for this guy, even writing in her online journal about him. But she was perhaps a little cautious, too. Some of her writing talks about her being a Pisces and him being a Scorpio, and that Pisces and Scorpios always tend to clash a bit. Is that true? I don't know enough about astrology. I'm a Pisces, so I'm curious here.
And Pisces. No, hey,
we're the sensitive sign. I always take pride in that.
I mean, you're a water sign. Yeah. I don't know enough about it.
I knew that you knew more than I did, though.
I do, but not enough to like be an talking expert. Shit in the podcast. Yeah.
Right. So the investigators began following this guy because it seemed like their best lead. Yes, it's true that Stephen Williams was the last known person to see her alive, but Stephen had been more than cooperative with investigators, and he was a respected member of the military with a nearly flawless record. Not even a
They usually are.
Not even a blip, though, of bad behavior going back to grade school. And Stephen even agreed to take a polygraph test, which he passed. So it led investigators to hone in on this new boyfriend, kind of hoping that maybe Trisha would show up, or at the very least, this new boyfriend would lead them into finding out some more information about her whereabouts. But as it turns out, that was a dead end. They had several interviews with this guy, and apparently he helped them in every way possible. It was quickly determined that he had nothing to do with her disappearance. So Ryan, maybe your intuition is right here, because as one lead turned out to be a dead end, another one popped up, and it popped up in that online journal I told you about. It was what Trisha wrote that finally made police start to look seriously at Stephen Williams. So Trisha's family didn't know this. Not even her close friends knew it. But she did confide in her online journal that Stephen would sometimes have a dark side. Mm. He would get abusive with her. And he even got abusive with some of her pets on multiple occasions.
Oh, so he's a sociopath.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like here, because
he passed the polygraph.
Yeah. And we'll tell you how he passed that polygraph shortly. But on multiple occasions, she wrote about Stephen killing her pets.
What?
And according to her writing, even in front of her at one point. Now, I couldn't find out what kind of pets these were, but to be honest, it doesn't really matter if it was a rabbit or a dog or whatever. The guy's a maniac if he's killing pets in front of you, you know? And we've seen this in previous cases as well. People who kill animals are much more likely to be serial killers or murderers themselves.
It's like the top, one of the top five indicators. Uh-huh.
Yeah, 100%. Now we know that Stephen isn't as respectable as once thought, which is important. But again, as we've said before, just because you're an asshole, that doesn't make you a murderer.
Right.
Now, all murderers are assholes, but it doesn't mean all assholes are murderers.
Accurate point.
So they needed concrete evidence to connect Stephen to Trisha's disappearance. And they finally found it in one eyewitness. As it turns out, this eyewitness saw Stephen Williams driving Trisha Todd's car. Bingo.
I fucking knew it.
As soon as I heard about the car being back at her place, I'm like, okay, did he drive the car back to her place?
Red flag.
Yeah. But that's not all. They also discovered security camera footage from a house across the street from Trisha's residence of a tall black male outside her house carrying a large pack, like a rucksack, you know, one of those packs that you take for camping.
Yeah.
And kind of scurrying away from the scene. And Stephen fit the description. When police brought this to Stephen's attention, what do you think he did?
There's a million and one things that he could do.
take a guess.
Did he run?
No, he actually finally stopped lying and for the most part told the police the truth. Not only did he admit to being the man in the security camera footage, but he also said he used a drug called Neurontin, which is a drug for seizures and nerve pain. But it can also be used to beat a polygraph test.
What a trash human being.
Agreed, but good information in case you ever get hooked up to a lie detector, eh, Ryan?
Baby, I am a terrible liar.
So, according to Steven, he quote unquote accidentally killed Trisha. He said that they got into an argument and things got heated.
Did he choke her out?
And he punched her and she fell from the blow, hit her head, and died.
Holy shit.
Seems unlikely.
That seems unlikely. He would have to hit her so hard.
Right. Yeah.
Or it would have to be like some kind of freak incident.
Right. Like,
but bottom line is you were the cause of the problem.
Exactly.
Whether
either
that's
way,
actually what happened.
Either way, you murdered her. But I mean, she would have to be like standing by a sharp object and then he pushes her and then her head falls on it or something. I mean,
yeah, just, coffee table, porcelain yeah. sink, something like that.
Well, he then told them that after she died, he took her lifeless body out to an isolated area, well out of the way of people, a place known as the Hungry Land Wildlife Preserve. It took 5 weeks for investigators to find her, though.
Oh, why?
Because it's just such a huge area. And eventually, Stephen Williams accepted a plea bargain. So in exchange for a 35-year sentence, he would tell police exactly how Trisha died, the real story, and exactly where he buried her body. So as you can probably guess, the story of him punching her and her falling to an accidental death was bullshit. In reality, it was what you said initially, Ryan. He strangled her. But it gets worse. In order to dispose of the body, he...
Did he hack her up?
Yeah.
Ah, gross.
Piece by piece, he threw her body parts into a 3x5 storage container. Then he poured a bunch of acid into the container and buried her in the Hungry Land Preserve.
Okay. Goes through all this work. He was married to this woman for, you said, 11 years?
11 years. And they grew up together.
What the fuck? You have to be so disconnected from your compassion to be able to do that.
They were childhood sweethearts.
What the hell?
And the only thing I can think of is that he was so upset when he found out that she was moving on with somebody else. And when he found out, he just snapped. There's so many guys out there that can't take rejection. And obviously, he took it to an extreme level. But it's a thing for a lot of guys, you know?
Just
fucking horrible.
I cannot wrap my head around it.
Well, so he then took police to the preserve. And I actually watched a video of him doing this. He gets out of the cop car. He's in handcuffs. And he places a red flag on the spot where he buried her body. And sure enough, that's where they found her dismembered body. Along with several teeth and fingertips that were strewn in other areas nearby, it appears that he took the teeth out and the fingertips so she couldn't be identified.
What an idiot. This is so much work.
And
it took them like no time to figure out that it was him.
Right. But it also just shows how sick he was. I mean, because to murder somebody is one thing. Horrible. But to dismember someone and to take out their teeth and fingertips, that's something else.
And someone you were like married to.
Yeah.
Someone you slept next to, had coffee with every day. Like,
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me?
Then they also found something else. The tools. The tools he used to torture and dismember her were in a marsh nearby, along with a reciprocating saw there that he used to, well, you know, cut her up. And her hair was still twined in the saw itself. Just sickening. It just makes you sick.
So, okay, you said he used them to torture her?
Yeah.
Why did he feel the need to torture her?
It was, well, here's what he was doing. And this is in that new documentary that's out on Hulu that I was telling you about. It's called The Hungry Land Homicide. It's revealed that Stephen had tortured Trisha before he killed her in an attempt to get her social media passwords, because his plan was to post as her and say that she was going to Haiti on a missionary trip as a nurse. Apparently she had been to Haiti before, I think. So he was going to try and pretend to be her. We've seen this before, if you remember the Amazon review serial killer. Mm-hmm. And he was going to post that, hey, I'm going to Haiti. I'm going to be down there for a while on this missionary trip. Even though all of her friends and family and coworkers would have seen that and said, no, you're not. I mean, if that's what he thought was going to save him, he's an idiot.
So he had a plan.
Yes. Premeditation. 100%. Mm. And I'm glad you brought that up, because investigators would learn that because of all of this, this was obviously a premeditated murder. And he bought the saw, the bin, the acid, and the tools all in his hometown of Raleigh, North Carolina, before coming down to Florida.
Straight up filth.
And the problem is several people are upset now because he made this plea bargain. They want him to be in prison for the rest of his life, or many are even calling for the death penalty.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's a way for him to spend the rest of his life in jail because of this plea bargain. I think the law says no, because they agreed to this. That's the way it's going to be.
Oh, oops, our hands are tied. Are you kidding?
Yeah. But I mean, that is how the justice system works. So,
well, fuck the justice system.
in this case, I agree with you. And I think he'll be in his early to mid 60s when he gets out.
Oh, so he gets his golden years. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
That's what he agreed to. It's weird, because I was thinking about that myself. I'm like, well, I mean, if you're already going to be in your 60s, why? You'll be institutionalized by that point anyway. Why don't you just spend the rest of your life in prison, you know?
He, with very little remorse, killed her. Premeditated. Yep. He hacked her up. He is a danger to society. They should not. This is what I mean when I say that we are too overpopulated. It's because all the sick ones are hiding among us.
Yeah. And unfortunately, ones like him are going to more than likely see the light of day again. Although I'm sure her family members will protest it until the day he gets out of prison. But it
and
does.
After, yeah. Yeah.
It does make you think, though, it was either the new boyfriend or just the divorce itself, because they had only been divorced, I think, 3 months. So maybe once the divorce was finalized, he said to himself, you know, I'm gonna get revenge here. And that's when he started planning it. It's hard to put yourself in somebody else's head, but it feels like that's what he did. Faith was adopted by Trisha's brother, Jonathan, and his wife, and she's now 10 years old. But it's just sad to think that one day, if she hasn't already, she's going to find out what her dad did to her mom. And that's just going to be a horrible conversation. Just an awful thing for a kid to find out. Sad. Very sad. But like I said, there's a new documentary out right now. It's a 2020 documentary on Hulu, and it goes far more in depth on this. You can check it out streaming right now. But what do you, the listeners, think? Let us know over on our socials. You can find us on Instagram at Unnatural the Podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Unnatural, a true crime podcast. Send us an email on the case or any case you'd like us to cover, unnaturalthepodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to like, follow, give us those 5-star reviews on Apple and Spotify, and we will talk to you next week. But in the meantime, be sure to make good choices.
And don't get got.
You know, the good news is tonight there's not going to be any crazy videos that you have to watch or anything. So at least you won't have to deal with that.
I actually, when I was doing the highway cleanup today, I was thinking to myself, what if I found like a body part? Like Andy would be so excited.
You would have to talk about it on the
podcast. Be obligated.
Yeah. Like once legally you were okay to talk about it, we would have to do an episode on it. I'm working on a side podcast. Who knows if I'll ever complete it.
You have a side chick?
I have. Not yet, I don't. I'm just working on one.
Oh, what the fuck?
Intrigued by the dark side of things like murder, kidnapping, and sex cults? What about when the criminal is your favorite musician or actor or director or writer? Hollywood might look like all glitz and glamour until you take a closer look. But I'll tell you one thing, that kind of point of view can make you more vulnerable. From Roman Polanski to Mackenzie Phillips to Judith Barsi to Kurt Cobain, some are predators and some are prey. I'm Dee Dee West, and I just might ruin your childhood. Follow my podcast, Broken Limelight, where I cover celebrity true crime stories. For more information, visit BrokenLimelight.com. Again, that's Broken Limelight. Follow it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts.